go someplace where I can be a woman.
You know what? You got spunk.
Well,
I hate spunk.
That's the camera. When the red light goes on, that means that the camera is about...
I know what I'm doing. Just cue me and then stick a sock in it.
This is Two J's in a Pod, the J Would Be Journalist. I'm Mary Ellen Murphy with WGHN Radio.
And I'm Sarah Leach with Ottawa News Network.
You say tomato, I say tomato. You say Hyzinga, I say Hyanga, Hyzinga, Hyanga. Nobody knows how to pronounce his name. Let's call the whole thing off. Rachel Maddow.
You always know when somebody is not from West Michigan.
Okay. This is what I do. When I get names that I don't know how to pronounce, I put the full name in Google.
Yeah.
Then I click on video.
Yeah.
Then I find an interview with them. Then I find the interviewer saying their name. That's what I do.
I had a managing editor at the Sentinel who always said Hyzinga. And I would always say, you're putting the wrong emphasis the incorrect syllable.
It's Hyzinga. I know people that say Hyzinga as
well.
I know.
It almost sounds like Japanese at that point.
Yeah, boy. I would have thought that Rachel Maddow, somebody would have Googled that for her, but it does happen.
I know.
I messed up Chris Kleinian's name when I was talking to him on the air, and he didn't correct me.
Bless his heart.
I was mortified for weeks. And see, that's the thing that people don't understand. When I have a typo or I do something and I mess up, we carry that for a few days, not weeks.
And Dutch names are a journey, man. Sometimes you can have the same spelling,
right,
and people will pronounce it differently depending on which branch of the family, of their shared ancestry. I mean, you don't even know. But eventually, I just say, can you tell me, like, for the next 1,000 years how to pronounce your name, because I'm going to get it wrong.
Oh, and you and I are East Side girls. What's that?
Try being a Wieringa in the East Coast.
Oh, that's Dirk. You're right. Or somebody on the east side of the state. If I said to somebody, spell Livernois for me.
Right.
Do you know how to? I've heard CBS Radio say Livonia instead of Livonia.
When I went to Eastern Michigan, I called it Livernus.
All right. Well, it's Bill Hyzinga. Okay. And he did have a telephone town hall. Rep Skolton is having an in-person one in mid-March.
Well, and as of yesterday, the Ottawa County Democrats have announced that they're going to have their own in-person town hall that they have invited Hyzinga to. And that, I believe, is on the 20th.
Okay. Okay.
In Holland.
Okay. All right. It's been a...
I'll write about it soon, so you'll get all the details.
Okay, all right.
They're
okay.
Like, he's not going to come. Well, we're going to do our own.
All right. Are you going to publish my column?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you like that column?
I did.
All right. I wrote about merit. Me and my merit. Anyway, enough about me. It was a very busy week. You attended the school board meeting with Grand Haven Area Public Schools.
Yeah. Well, and in a lot of ways, I'm conditioned to be in very long meetings.
Well, I get it. I wake
it was 4.5 hours.
I wake up to a text from you, and I so wanted to respond, but I thought,
know.
No, it'll wake her up.
I know.
So I'm like, okay, this
was more like so that you knew to go and check. Right,
I knew what was happening. Yeah. It was like, okay, I need to check my email, and I need to see if I have a press release. What happened last night? So, how did you? That was a long meeting. How did you feel when you were at that meeting? Because I think it's different when I hear audio, and I you know, it's different listening to something than actually physically being at a meeting.
It's really interesting to me, because a lot of my Ottawa County coverage, I watch the meetings on YouTube. I was vicariously stressed out just watching those meetings on YouTube. I cannot imagine how my anxiety would have been had I been in person, mm-hmm, when people were shouting at one another,
okay,
and talking each other down. This was not quite that, but it was quite an emotional meeting.
Okay.
And so really what was set up was that this was the monthly Board of Education meeting for Grand Haven Public Schools. They had their regular business, but the most important item on the agenda was the repurposing of the Mary A. White School District. Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, I have two children who currently attend there. One who was supposed to attend for the next 2 years, but now will not, because the board ultimately voted 5-2 to repurpose the building as an early childhood learning center. And a lot of parents showed up. This was in Lakeshore Middle School's gymnasium. It was a packed house.
Oh, yeah.
The bleachers were full. The chairs on the floor were full. There was standing room only. And there were 2 hours of public comment. And there were staff members, about 20 staff members who collectively got up and made a public comment. There were multiple parents who either are current or past parents who either attended Mary A. White or mm-hmm. had a relative or, you know, librarians were showing up. There was a lot of great points made, but of particular note, I think that the biggest criticism was how this plan was announced and mm-hmm. handled, because as we remember from previous episodes, this was announced quite suddenly with no notice. And during the discussion of the board members themselves said that they found out when everybody else did and had no idea that this was coming. So clearly that is a bad optic for everyone. And I think that one of the things that I felt, now, again, I'm wearing two hats in this moment.
Yeah, you are.
Where I'm a journalist and I'm a mom.
Yeah.
And so I went as a mom.
Of
but
course.
I can't ever quite turn
it
off.
How do you can't turn it off?
Right, right. So still in the back of my head, I'm still kind of like objectively observing. And so I'm trying to separate my emotional, you know, piece of me away from it. And all I'm seeing is there's questions on transparency. There's questions about whether or not Duncan's Woods can be used because it's adjacent to this property. There were two commissioners for Duncan's Woods who attended the meeting and said, you haven't even approached us about permission to use our property. This is a very sensitive ecological space.
Yeah.
And so this is not guaranteed. We urge you to pause to have conversations with us. Now, later, the board's with ODC's presentation, Outdoor Discovery Center's presentation to revamp this property, they said, well, we don't need Duncan's Woods.
Oh.
We can just make our own outdoor playscape and not use the pristine property that is immediately next door, which, again, it's weird. It just comes off as weird.
Hmm.
And so when you see the board members start to deliberate, they're focused on the future of the district, and I recognize that they're trying to balance the needs of 5,000 students. We have declining enrollment. We need to make adjustments in order to be viable and sustainable moving forward. And this is nothing new. School districts have to expand and contract with populations. That's absolutely normal. So there was this one board member whose name was Heather Herringers. She suggested that we pause for 2 weeks and hold a special meeting in 2 weeks in order to potentially answer additional questions, let the news settle and marinate just a little bit more.
I think that was a good thing,
right?
To suggest.
And she even potentially suggested a town hall, because we did hear some of the public commenters referencing the fact that this had already escalated to the Grand Haven City Council, where people were making comments, because this is not just a Grand Haven schools issue. This mm-hmm. affects the whole city. This mm-hmm. affects the whole region.
Mm-hmm.
And the success and health of our public school districts affects everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of questions that I think weren't, I don't think that they took the time to adequately answer. The communication, and I'm coming from a professional communicator headspace, was
sure.
just, I mean, F rating. You made every wrong decision from Jump Street to present. And when they get to the point where they have to make the decision, the board chair, Nicole Stack, she said, well, what would 2 weeks gain us? And to which Heather says, the respect of the community. And a rounding applause in the auditorium, and so then Nicole, the chair, says, no, we're having none of that. This is our meeting. We know exactly where you stand. It was very disrespectful in my mind.
She's been on the school board since 2014.
Yes, she did reference the fact that she is one of the more long-standing members of the board. And I just thought, this is a really inappropriate way for the leader of a public body to conduct themselves. And speaking from experience, I know what poor leadership looks like. And you can be respectful. You can be empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if you don't like something, don't say anything at all. But there was a real kind of defensive quality to the way that she was presenting some of her comments, and you could feel the alienation in the room.
I believe
with
it.
The audience. And yeah. So when you're not even giving like even lip service to caring about the people who are there that you're allegedly serving, mm-hmm. I think that that's a huge disconnect. And so one of the other comments that really bothered me in discussion is that the two new members, Heather and I believe it was Cindy
Casemeyer.
Yes, thank you. She introduced herself as the newest member of the board, right? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, wait a minute. I just got here in January, and you guys are referencing conversations from October, to which Nicole, the chair, says, hey, you know, this was an agenda meeting in October, and this was publicly noticed, and I don't know how much more transparent we could be. Now, inside Sarah's brain, which is a lot of pizza and fire, mm-hmm. my journalism self like literally shoved Tiger Mom out of the way and just thought, who do you think that you are mansplaining public service mm-hmm. to an audience? It's your job to communicate what is going on with this body. It is not their job to show up once a month, every Monday, to figure out what you guys are up to. You're a resident too, and you should recognize that. And there was, it's so frustrating to watch public bodies operate this way when they feel like they don't have any kind of responsibility or onus to do outreach. Mm-hmm. Well, the superintendent went to all of these stakeholder meetings, really? And they said that they have reached out and engaged in every single form of media available to them. Do you have any response to that? Because I don't think that they're on WGHN all that often.
No. And we're hopefully moving forward, we will have them on every month.
Because the only thing that I can think of is, you know, the Grand Haven Tribune. Mm-hmm. And look, I love the Tribune, but that's a limited readership. They're certainly not reaching out to ONN. Now, to be fair, we are a new entity, but we have been in existence since December.
That's true.
And I haven't heard from them. I'm on their mailing list.
You
they
are.
Haven't
okay.
reached out to us at all okay. in order to promote any kind of messaging regarding this decision until after it was made. Mm-hmm. So I just think that that's really disingenuous. And it's a disservice to the public. I really do.
I would agree. I mean, we are the official radio station for the city of Grand Haven. We're an award-winning radio station. We're not a low-power FM radio station. We're the EAS radio station for the county.
Right.
They should have been on WGHN.
Well,
before they were anywhere else, they
exactly.
should have been on GHN. I'm sorry.
Exactly. And I'll tell you that in this moment, I could, you know, I think that empathy is sort of becoming a lost trait in humanity in present day. And so I felt a really interesting level of empathy for all upstart groups, including Ottawa Impact, actually, in 2020, when they felt that frustration over COVID and engaging with the county public health department. And they had questions. And they felt like they were not really adequately, you know, answered, that they weren't taken seriously. I'm not condoning anything that they did after that, but I understand the anger and frustration where they feel like they're powerless and that they are inspired to act and to organize.
Wow.
Well, because, and I'll tell you, as I'm walking out the building, I heard all these parents around me saying, I'm not going to support the public school district anymore. I'm going to pull my kids out. I'm not going to vote for any more bond issues. Now, I know that a lot of that is like hot talk,
oh,
right?
Oh, sure.
And they're probably going to calm down. But you just alienated a sixth of the district. And you didn't even really, you were kind of like hashtag sorry, not sorry. And I think that taking that 2 weeks and trying to say, look, we messed up this messaging. We messed up how this all rolled out. We understand that there's some transparency issues. Just acknowledge it. Take the egg on your face a little bit. Mm-hmm. Eat a little humble pie and then still make the same decision. But then we can all move forward together and you get a little bit of buy-in back from at least part of that, mm-hmm. that demographic that is frustrated and angry. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even care. I mean, it just, you walked out saying, you know, well, we have to make the hard decisions. I don't understand why 2 weeks was that much to ask.
Yeah, it's really not that much to ask. Let me ask you, how are the kids doing?
My youngest is kind of she's somebody who needs a lot of consistency in her day to day. So right now I told her about the outcome of the decision, and so now we have to make the choice about whether or not we're going to go to our elementary that we're districted into. So that would be Peach Plains. Mm-hmm. But then if we continue to be able to access the daycare in downtown, will there be a bus to a different school? That could be Rosie Mound. But honestly, the district hasn't had any communication with any of the daycares, and so they don't even know what's happening. Also, I just want to point out that this is an early childhood learning center that they really want to, they want to act, they want to revamp this property so that it's ready in the fall. I understand the urgency about getting the transition team in place and making all these subsequent decisions. However, this announcement came out after the kindergarten and Young Five Roundup open houses at all of the elementary schools.
Oh, no.
So what are we doing? What are
Whoa,
we doing?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, guys, like, it's like amateur hour.
I'm
a public schools kid. I send my kids to public schools.
Sure.
But this is ridiculous.
Wow.
It's just ridiculous.
You have to wonder if, I don't know, some message got lost
Well,
somewhere.
So Nicole Stack did address that. She said that they didn't know, that the board did not know, that this was their decision to make.
Yeah.
That they thought that it was up to the superintendent to make those decisions. And an interesting comment that was made by board member Crystal Boyd, she said that we tasked the superintendent to come up with a plan to cut costs, address early learning needs. There was a laundry list of, play up strengths and minimize weaknesses. We didn't ask her to come to us with multiple plans. So we have to vote this up or vote this down. And I just thought, but you're her boss. you're the board that oversees her. You're like her little group of supervisors.
Right.
You can tell her, you can say, we're not happy with the plan that you presented and we need you to go back and revamp, or we want you to tweak one part of this plan. You absolutely have the authority to do that as the controlling body of these decisions. And I just like, when we're elected to these positions, can we please learn what the responsibilities are and how to exercise that governance? I beg of you.
Let me ask you something.
Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox.
Let me ask you something. Do you think like school boards across the country in general know that there are not people in newsrooms to cover them anymore?
I don't think that they recognize that at all. But I will say that this is absolutely tied to the divestment of local news coverage.
Thank you.
In our country. There used to be a day back in the 80s, the heydays of journalism. Man, I was born in the wrong time. where they would send a report. You know, you would be the education beat. You might have one or two people on the education beat, and you would go to every single school district, and you would go to their monthly meetings. And it's the same thing with city council meetings and township board meetings and all of the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And even if something didn't happen, you'd write up a few paragraphs and you'd send it into your editor, and then you'd go home and or sometimes you'd smoke in the office and maybe have a Jack Daniel's. So also born in the wrong time. I missed a lot of good stuff, but
I love it.
But now we have maybe two people who are in a countywide entity, and so there's no one. Also, it's not like a lot of these organizations are really putting a lot of effort into making things accessible remotely. During COVID, this was a requirement by the governor because people could not physically go to a lot of these meetings, and so there was a temporary order for open meetings to go onto YouTube. Now, a lot of those entities kept that thing going, and that's great. The county included. You know, they really made a lot of gains in terms of what we're able to do now. A lot of city councils have done that too, but the school board made a big deal about the fact that this particular meeting on Monday night was available live stream, which we've never done before, or at least not in recent memory. And I just thought, why? YouTube is not that expensive.
No, it's not. It's not.
You just have to set up a camera and hit record. I mean, you just have to have access to an internet signal. I mean, it really is that simple. And so you don't really have a right to chastise the public that you're serving,
right?
That they have the responsibility of finding where you are and figuring out what you're up to. That's all that I'm saying is, I know I'm picking on GHAPS right now, but I find this in a lot of different public entities.
Oh, sure.
That are just like, well, we followed the law. Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, it's kind of like that one husband slash dad who wants to get a pat on the back for watching his kids.
Yeah.
Well, you're supposed to watch your kids. It's kind of required. You know?
I have like 4.5 hours of meetings in Ottawa County that I haven't even to comb through.
Oh, you know,
what
it wasn't.
What happened yesterday?
Well, this is, again, the consequence of combining all of these minor committees into two, you know, kind of chunkier subcommittees. Finance and administration was actually just a little bit over an hour, so that wasn't too bad. That went at a good clip. Planning and policy featured a lot of annual reports, so that's one reason why it stretched on forever and a day. But there were two interesting things that came out of that meeting. One was that we got an update on the county administrator search. So there has been a firm identified, and
they're called Double Hall.
Yeah, Double Hall. Which, what? Which, you know, immediately I had to go to the Google.
What are they? 1-800 Double Hall got junk or something?
I know. I think that they're based on the east side of the state. It looks like their founder slash president is in the Brighton area.
Double Hall Solution, yes. Strategic planning.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
I got it. Okay.
And there was a representative at the meeting yesterday, and he was giving a bit of an update. There were, I believe, 18 search firms that applied, okay, and then this one was selected.
Okay. It's a 248 number, so it's the other side of the state.
Correct. Right. Although now area codes can travel, so you never quite know.
You're right.
I have a 231 area code on my phone.
I have a 231?
But I've lived in Grand Haven for like 18 years. So.
Okay. Oh, you're right. Okay. Okay.
I got it when I was up in Mount Pleasant.
Okay.
When I was going to Central, and then they actually reclassified that area, so it's no longer 231 either. So now it's like the upper western side of
Got
the
it.
State. And I think Mid-Michigan is 989. I don't know. I can never really keep up. But
my home phone growing up was Prescott 73489.
Nice.
Dirk, you're old enough to remember that, aren't you?
Ours is 144.
Oh, my. In Ravenna, all you had to do was like dial a two-digit number to talk to somebody.
One.
So weird. Anyway,
so I think that the next step is they're forming an interview committee. Well, it's not really an interview committee because they might speak to candidates. It's more like it's a work group to review applications. This is where there was a little bit of static with the former OI majority members, mm-hmm, particularly Allison Miedema, where she was she raised some concerns because the people that are in this group, it was compiled by interim County Administrator Gary Rosema and Deputy Interim Administrator Ron France. Mm-hmm. And it includes different people that are representative of the various municipalities around the county. And so what Allison was saying is that, well, before, the Board of Commissioners was deeply involved every step of the way. And I would agree with her that is definitely the way. But, I mean, in my view, it was overly involved,
where
they didn't really allow anyone else to, you know.
Right.
So there's got to be a middle ground here.
Mm-hmm.
To which the answer from the administration was, well, just so that you know, Gary and Ron are also in this group, and former county Treasurer Amanda Price is on there. We think that we're going to have a really good representation of, you know, county experience. And I don't know, it just seemed like that explanation, while reasonable, was not really accepted. And I think, you know, OI kind of has a controlling nature about it anyway, where they really like to be in charge of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not really realistic when you're talking about government bureaucracy.
Yeah. So, okay.
You know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what we're going to see is a job description going up fairly soon, and that we're going to see some applicants, and they're on a time clock, because Rosema only committed to staying on for, I think, 6 months, 5 or 6 months. So by June, you know, we've got to be pretty close to a plan. I'm sure he'll stay on until we get somebody in, but he doesn't really want to hang out.
No, he doesn't.
Longer than he has to.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be there any longer than he has to. Things are happening really, really fast in national news as well. I don't know. Is the White House a used car dealership now? I mean, come on.
Are they selling used Teslas?
If anybody else would have done that. The tariffs on steel and aluminum are getting response from Europe and Canada. That's a 25% on metals coming into the United States from any country in the world, including allies. Measles are spreading.
I don't know if you ever saw the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the opening scene from that movie where you get introduced to Ferris and and there is a scene in the high school where he is not because he plays hooky that day. He calls in sick.
Yeah.
And his teacher is Ben Stein,
right?
The retired, very well-known economist, former host of the Ben Stein Show. And he is in the middle of giving a lesson and drawing a chalk on the chalkboard. And he says, Bueller, Bueller. Everybody remembers that part. But a well-circulated clip over the last probably 8 to 9 months now, it was before the election, features that opening scene. And the lesson that he's teaching is about tariffs and about how tariffs actually drove the economy further into the Great Depression. And that it's just not an economically viable way of salvaging an economy. And I found that fascinating, that the things that I learned about in movies is now becoming real life. And the things that I've read about in history books, I now get to experience firsthand. It's experiential learning.
Wow. The way you look at life.
Well, you have to have a pretty wicked sense of humor to survive in today's world.
Do we have any details about this thing that we're going to in Cleveland? She never sent us anything.
I know, Peg McNichol,
on,
if you're
man.
Listening, we Mary Ellen and I want to hit the road and
I need
talk
to,
shop.
I need to budget and I need some details on this. But I believe that we will be able to attend the different seminars and stuff. We'll be able
that
to attend
that.
That
will be cool. Also, yeah. I'll be able to dump my kids at my aunt's house, and then I can go on the road with you. And
there you
then
go.
I can,
perfect.
I can, yeah, girls'
okay.
weekend.
Okay. I don't really know anything else. There's a lunar eclipse this weekend.
I thought I felt something in the air.
Early Friday morning. Yeah.
You know when it's a full moon, like all the crazy stuff starts to happen. It's hard to believe that it could get any crazier.
Oh, it can. And it probably will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I haven't been paying a whole lot of attention to what's going on in Lansing.
No, well, there was the CMH director for Ottawa Community Health, Dr. Michael Brashears. He was actually testifying before the House Appropriations Subcommittee.
Okay.
Yesterday, on Tuesday, because I know this because his one of his other staff members gave his report and said that that's where he was.
Mm-hmm.
So then I found it on the UE tubes, mm-hmm. and he gave about a 12-minute presentation. It wasn't nearly as passionate and maybe doomsday-ish is the way that he presents it in his county presentation.
Was it about Medicaid?
But it's about Medicaid and how there's just this funding inequity, and he kind of is hitting on the same points about how we need to find a solution. We need to find a better way of doing this, and it needs to happen now, or else these subgroups and I will tell you that I've been trying to figure out like how Medicaid actually is organized, mm-hmm. and you need a PhD in order to understand it, because it is such a complicated network, because layers upon layers upon layers have been added or subtracted over the decades and reorganized. And so now it's just a big interwoven tangled mess. So a lot of it is like, you know, are there too many layers, but can you actually surgically extract any of them? And each state decides how it puts this system into place. So sometimes it's a directly dispersed down to the county level and counties manage it. Sometimes it funnels through all of these state layers like it does in Michigan. And so it's complicated. And the bottom line is that we're going to have CMHs and their parent groups like these. We're part of the Lakeshore Regional Entity, which is a collection of West Michigan counties.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, I believe there's eight or 10 of those in the state, and they're going to start going bankrupt because they can't turn people away that are eligible for services. But if they don't have the money to cover it, how can they operate with a negative balance?
Oh,
and that's just not, it's an untenable system that we have. It's going to be okay.
All right.
Mary Ellen's soul just left her body.
On that uplifting note.
Yeah, right? We're all going to die.
That's episode 8.
And just goes to show you, it's always something.